The Dynasty League podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Head over to mybookie.ag and use the promo code DYNESports, DYNES sports with an S at the end of it. No space in between for some of the friendliest lines across the internet. Must be 18 years of age or older. Please gamble responsibly.
Well, Craig is finally awoken from his dairy-induced coma. That was his hot wings challenge last week. We got more updates on his than
Bowel
we
movements, what
bowel
else?
movement than we cared to hear about, but he did it. So kudos to you, Craig. Congratulations. Not only did you survive that, we managed to survive the one of the weirdest weeks in NFL history because it coincides, of course, with round one of the fantasy football playoffs. So wild scores, wild schedules, like teams were clearly out of sync with some of the restrictions that got put on them. They were doing walkthroughs instead of actual practices. And some of the teams, you could clearly tell that really threw them for a loop. So 150 cases just in week 15 alone, 150 different players entered NFL protocols. What did you guys make of the disaster that was round one of the fantasy football playoffs last week?
It was interesting. You kind of had to be if let's say you're starting guys who are playing those Monday and Tuesday games, you kind of have to have a backup plan. For example, Craig and I had Tyler Lockett. He played Tuesday night, so we had to have, we have to have a guy like Freddie Swain on standby just in case Tyler Lockett doesn't play.
Yeah, it's, I mean, he might have been the biggest profile guy as far as fantasy football relevant. Like, I think most of the guys this past week, at least, they're more, you're not really relying on them to win you the round. Like, it's not the big guns, right? But I mean, it's not a good start for this week.
No, I was going to say that's
Like,
definitely not the case this week,
no.
especially for your Chiefs there. I don't know what they were up to after that game against the Chargers, but jeez.
I think that's the thing. There was, like, leading up to that Thursday night game, there were players on both sides, the Chargers and the Chiefs, that had COVID. So yeah, I kind of had a feeling that after that game, there was going to be just a ton more. And sure enough, like, the Chargers are getting hit too. Like, Austin Eckler today got put on COVID list, right? So those are the big, like, big fantasy names that are coming out now. Eckler, Kelce Hill, and that's just from the Thursday game. Let's see what happens for the rest of the week here. Like,
Well, apparently, according to the NFLPA, they were pretty close to canceling three games outright last week. They didn't say which ones. Obviously, you can probably speculate it was probably the ones that they rescheduled. But I mean, between the league's insistence to just trudge ahead, the players' unions are calling Goodell and company hypocrites with their testing, people getting put on the list and then clearing the list, and all of a sudden, you've got guys who are faking vaccine passports who are suddenly just going to be like wide receiver one down in Tampa Bay. Like, it's a mess right now. So what do you even do? Because on one of my teams, I actually do have Hill and Kelce. So what is your advice to someone like me who has just been ravaged by potentially having some of their star players out?
don't pick up anybody else because you play Craig and I in the playoffs this week.
Take a knee, kneel out the
Excellent
clock.
advice. Excellent advice. Honestly, I don't know. I really don't know what you would do. I don't think you want to just go ahead and replace them on the team because, like, you're not going to go out and Kelce's out, and so is her second string tight end. I better pick up rookie Noah Gray. Like, I don't know if you want to go there. Like, yeah, Mahomes is throwing the ball, but it's not like he's going to be looking for him like he does Kelce. So you just go waiver wire and see what you can get from other teams, really. Like, I
Yeah.
don't know if you just replace within.
Well, it's going to be interesting this week too, because especially with leagues that have waiver wire budgets and whatnot, probably a lot of people have already either A, blown most of their waiver wire budget, or B, have waiver wire leftover money to put in those bids. But how confident are you even in spending that money on people who were potentially a close contact of one of the players who just got put on the list, and then the guy you pick up and spend whatever $20 on ends up getting popped for COVID the next day and gets put on the list as well too? Like, is this just a case of you pretty much wait until the day of and see where people are who came back off that list, or are you putting your chips in the middle of the table and going out and grabbing whoever you can the second that waiver wire's open, which is tomorrow actually, instead of its usual schedule? Everything got pushed back this week.
Well, if you want to be certain of a low likelihood of someone landing on the COVID list, you can pick up a Bengal, because as per Joe Burrow's interview, there's nothing to do in Cincinnati, which is why the team has been so fortunate of not having many COVID positive cases.
I don't think his fans will mind that because he's from Ohio. Like, it's like,
yeah,
he's right. All of them are like, you're right. You're right, Joe. There isn't much.
This is speaking from more than just a year and a half of experience. He knows the ins and outs of Northern Ohio there.
Yeah, like Cincinnati, we can talk about Ottawa snow removal because we lived it. But if someone from Calgary is like, oh, Ottawa can't remove snow, like, what the fuck?
that's where you draw the line, Ottawa snow removal?
I don't know. I'm just picturing Christmas Eve being a mess.
Lord, speaking of messes, that Saints versus Bucks game, messy on a couple of fronts, right? You've got 9-0 as a final score to begin with. Tom Brady gets blanked. The Bucks end up losing three players, which we'll get to in a minute there, injury-wise. Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator for the Saints, is actually calling plays because Sean Payton's in the COVID protocols. Like, what in the world was going on in that game? Hopefully you didn't have many players on either side of the ball.
But it was satisfying to watch, though. It's always good to see the evil be defeated. Tom Brady's offense.
Brady's spoken so like a true good. Colts fan there.
Man, and do you know what? The Saints have quickly become the Miami Dolphins of the NFC. Just there's a divisional team that Tom Brady can't seem to dominate. The one team.
Didn't know where you were going with that for a minute there. It ended up being a compliment. not many things calling people the Miami Dolphins is a compliment.
No, there's something about watching Brady lose it's just another thing he does that's the best. Like, it's just the best meltdowns, the best hits.
Yeah.
Like, it's just wild.
I got to admit to you, it was just funny. How does he go and scream? What people are kind of speculating what he says, but what did he say? Like, go fuck yourself or something, or something like that. But yet he doesn't get flagged for taunting.
Because Brady.
Heck yes.
He didn't. He talked. He didn't point. I think that's the big. If he pointed at him, that's it.
Wow.
That's like the cue they pick up on. They use that sign language, like, oh, something was said in that direction. What direction? The one he was pointing. Like, that's all I got. It's only pointing. There was one play. There, like, I can't remember who it was now, but they caught a jump ball pass in the end zone and very quickly just pointed. Like, I missed it until, like, the third replay. And he just went about his touchdown celebration. He got called for taunting. It's like, come on.
Make the play and walk away. I don't like it. I don't like it as much as you, but that's the adage. The NFL is going with make the play and walk away.
Oh, well, if it rhymes, it has to be true, right?
Yeah, they like it when you rhyme the words like that.
Dennis Allen, let's give the man a little bit of kudos here. Goes out and calls quite the game, the defensive coordinator for the Saints. Number one, the Saints do have a good defense. They have had a good defense for a couple of years now. But number two, shuts out Tom Brady, divisional rival, high-powered, high-scoring Tampa Bay offense. If you are a team that is going to be firing your head coach this offseason, so let's say a Jacksonville, a probably Chicago Bears, like, is that someone who you're maybe taking a look at there, Dennis Allen, with what he's done down in New Orleans?
Could be. Definitely worth an interview.
Yeah, I was going to say, I always just assume that Eric Bieniemy is the next person up for a head coaching job, but never gets one. Poor guy, he deserves it.
There's some rumors that he's not all it's cracked up to be kind of thing in there, and it's almost like I've heard that maybe he doesn't put in the effort that he should as an offensive coordinator and just relies too much on the weapons. Doesn't prep properly sometimes, and I don't know, just rumors kind of thing, right? It's almost like I think the Chiefs really like they can't fire the guy because there isn't anything wrong, but it's kind of like, hey, this guy should get a job, and they want to promote from within. I think they really like Kafka, but just rumors.
Well, Craig's got all the inside info for every sport, so I trust him. Trust him with all my heart.
NFL insider, Craig Anich.
Just rumors. Anyways, I don't know. He obviously doesn't interview well, right, too. Like, it's how many years in a row he's been getting interviews, just hasn't gotten the job. So, but I think that's part of it. They always, for whatever reason, just go to the offensive coordinators for a head coaching decision because it's such a quarterback-driven league. I don't know if Allen will actually get a job, right? It's always just like who's potentially right now. The only one I can think of, maybe Minnesota, if they get rid of Zimmer, they'll want to keep the offensive coordinator there and just get a different defensive-minded head coach there to work with the players they have. But I'd be shocked if it's not an offensive coordinator being promoted for Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville.
Should we turn the microphone over to Randy right now? He seems to have a lot of opinions in the background.
That is not Randy. That is the psycho dog. She heard the door creak open and thinks there's an intruder. Randy is being
a calm dog.
Well, like we mentioned off the top, painful for the Bucks for a couple of reasons. Not only did they lose to the divisional rival, but they also lost big time roster-wise, three key weapons.
Holy shit.
Godwin, torn ACL, done for the year. Fournette, headed to the IR, done for the regular season. Hopefully we'll be back for the postseason. And then Evans, with his hamstring injury, obviously left that game. Status for week 16, currently unclear. Who is the loss out of those three if you are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I think maybe Fournette. This sound maybe sounds stupid, but I think I'll make the case for Fournette for this question. He's had such a good year and gives them such a good complement run game to Tom Brady's aerial attack. I think, you know, Tom Brady can succeed with other wide receivers, but I think there's a bigger drop off between Fournette and Rojo getting a full time share than the other wide receivers dropping off to the other ones that they have with Tom Brady throwing the ball.
So you're a big Scotty Miller and Tyler Johnson believer then, are you?
Nah, man. I am a big fan of the vaccination card forger, Antonio Brown, who's going to be wide receiver one when Craig and I go against Kyle this week in fantasy.
Oh, I thought you were talking about your other team. You had him on there, which didn't even make the playoffs. So
no, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the one that's playing you.
You're heavily invested in Antonio Brown and his garage vaccine forgery shop that he's got going on down in South Florida. Listen,
everybody makes mistakes. I'm kidding. He's an idiot, but hey, he's on our fantasy team. And as long as that's the case, I will continue to exhibit a conflict of interest.
We're going Bruce Arians. We're just trying to win. Yeah. Give a damn about his past.
I mean, if he like killed people, then I'd probably be like, okay, fine, I don't like him.
I would hope that he wouldn't be playing football if that was the case.
Like, yeah, exactly.
You know, jail, you know, preferably if he's killed people. That's ideal. Where you want to put him?
Craig's the lawyer. He makes a good
point. I'm not. I'm just, I feel like that's common sense, Eric.
Craig Anich.
Insider slash legal counsel. Craig Anich.
Craig Anich, have you or someone you know been hurt in an accident? Call Craig.
Yeah. Have you been killed? Let's put that person in jail. I think the biggest loss is probably, I mean, luckily it's week to week, but it would be Evans. That's the red zone target. That's the big guy that can catch those jump balls. And I think you saw a little bit.
Yeah, that's Rob Gronkowski now. That's Cam.
Okay. Great. And how did he do against the Saints without Evans?
Well, I mean, it's.
And that's my point.
Tomatoes, tomatoes.
No, it's.
I'm kidding. I know. It's probably Mike Evans. I just said I would make the case for Leonard Fournette. That's all. I don't disagree.
You can do that. Am I allowed to make my case now, sir?
Craig, I just said I agree with you.
Eric, tomato, you've been overruled tomato. In Craig's law.
Tomato.
Fine. Okay. I guess I have to defer to Craig. He's our lawyer here. Fine.
I don't know. I think Antonio Brown coming back and between Johnson and Miller, they can sort of make up that middle of the field. Mid to deep threat that Godwin can get those kind of routes that Godwin runs, but no one's 6'5" at the wide receiver position where Brady can just lob the ball up to Evans.
Well, might as well make it a trifecta here, because I would argue that Chris Godwin is actually the biggest loss for them as well too, because again, I'm going to go right in the middle of your two arguments there when it comes to Evans and Gronkowski, who's that red zone threat. He still does have Gronkowski. They don't have that deep threat where Evans is mostly getting his work, as you say, 20 yards and in. He's not stretching the field like Godwin was, who was nearly at, I believe he went down with 98 receptions, didn't have the touchdowns that Mike Evans had, but definitely brought that different element. Antonio Brown being more of that you know, 5-10 yard catch a pass. All of his stuff is yards after the catch type thing. So he's definitely a different skill set there. I think it's Godwin, but I mean, the case, as we all just made, could be made that any one of the three are integral parts of that Bucs offense.
And they lost them all.
And they lost them all.
It was a crazy game of poker. They lost them all.
There you go.
No idea what that's from.
At least you can take solace in knowing that they've gone out and signed Le'Veon Bell to the roster to back up Rojo, but Le'Veon Bell putting his soon-to-be boxing career on hold. He had already called out Jake Paul and was actually starting to prepare and train to become the next celebrity boxer when the Bucs called and signed him to their roster. So we won't be able to see him in the ring, which I guess is kind of a loss. I don't know.
But you'll be able to.
So many people just lining up to get knocked out by Paul. Like, are they making that much money where they can get just embarrassed and have their brains sloshed around and they don't care? I just...
Probably.
Well, the thing with... Oh, my God. I don't even want to start going down this whole Jake Paul rabbit hole here because I think it's the biggest crock and it's the biggest scam in sports. We'll eventually one day find out that everyone was just paid off and the Paul brothers are just laughing their way to the entire bank here.
Yeah.
But the whole point of it is he doesn't fight real fighters and he literally just pays people to take dives. Like, he didn't land a single decent punch in his fight, his second one against Woodley. And all of a sudden Woodley just decides, nah, I'm just going to eat this one and go down. Like, every one of his fights look fishy. They all look staged. He's not a good fighter. Put him in there against someone who actually trains against a boxer. Change my mind. But it's all people who look where they are in their careers.
Oh, I know.
Who are trying to get one final paycheck, and that's something that he can provide them because all these idiots keep buying all the pay-per-views and shelling out the cash to the Paul brothers.
It's wild. Anyways.
Yeah, maybe.
Back to the football.
Lions beat the Cards.
All right.
Oh, your boy, Dan Campbell, getting it done there. Campbell.
Yes. Nobody I'm telling you. Detroit was not a 0-17 team. They should have about 3, maybe 4 wins right now. They were in close games earlier in the year. I knew it was only a matter of time before they threw up a couple wins or ties. We all knew it was going to happen.
What a difference between coaches and teams where friggin' Urban Meyer, the team is just doing backflips now that he's gone. And meanwhile, everyone's just losing their mind over Campbell, like crying in the locker room after wins. They freaking love that guy.
Yeah, man. I love that guy. I hope they keep him.
Well, he's definitely earned at least a couple more. Like, he's definitely earned next season. If you're wondering if it was one of those coaches where they didn't perform well enough.
Anything can happen, and, you know, not just the NFL, but all sports tends to let coaches go for, after 1 or 2 years of non-success. And I think that's jumping the gun a little bit. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before of how many, many, many of the greatest coaches didn't really fare well in their first year as a head coach. So I'm always with the school of patience and not jumping the gun too much on these, unless, of course, you're an Urban Meyer or somebody else who's a real problem. At least in Detroit, Dan Campbell seems to be a really likable guy, and the guys respect him.
Yeah, well, let's pump the brakes here on, you know, greatest coaches of all time, starting off slow. I think it's a little premature to lump him into that category. I'm still of the opinion of nice guy, but probably isn't going to be getting too much done with that team, and we'll revisit this a couple years down the line, but never did I say that he was getting fired after year one. I still question the hire. I think there were better people out there. Good for him, though. You can't help but feel for him. I just don't think he's the long-term answer. That being said, though, you got to give the man credit for what he accomplished, because the Cardinals aren't a joke of a team. They were the number one seed in the NFC coming into that game, and they put an absolute beatdown on him. Like, Kyler Murray couldn't get anything going, to the point where I'm sweating against Craig because Murray is barely outperforming Ben Roethlisberger, who barely has a pulse out there for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. They look past him. It happens. Cardinals just looked past the Lions.
And listen, we could be seeing the emergence of a great star in Detroit. My boy, the guy who I mentioned right at the beginning of the year of one of the best names in football, Amon-Ra St. Brown.
How much is not having Hopkins hurting the Cardinals, though? Because that offense looked really discombobulated. Like, is it just a matter of, like you said, Craig, they were looking past the lines, wonky week. They didn't have practices. They were doing walkthroughs instead of actual game plan. A lot of remote Zoom this, Zoom that, as opposed to actually getting together as a team to avoid any more outbreaks. Or is this Hopkins injury, which, you know, he's out 6 weeks, torn MCL, earliest he's coming back, if you're really optimistic, is like maybe NFC Championship, maybe around earlier, maybe Super Bowl, but that's kind of the timeline. Like, how much of a key loss is that for the Cardinals?
Pretty key, I think. And I hope it takes them until week 17 to figure things out on their offense. They can take a week off this week to figure things out, to just let their opponents run all over them and learn a thing or two from it.
And who would their opponents be this week, Eric?
The Indianapolis Colts. The Colts of Indianapolis.
Any chance you can get to plug them, eh?
Yeah. 200 yards all-purpose for Mr. Taylor. Strengthening his MVP, or at very least, offensive player of the year bid.
You think he's MVP?
No, I don't. That's a pipe dream.
You think he should be?
Maybe. I think if you did it in terms of who's the most valuable to their team, I think Aaron Rodgers still probably beats him out. Tom Brady, maybe until last game, and maybe we'll see how he performs from now to the end of the year. Maybe Tom Brady also wins it, but I don't think Tom Brady is as valuable to the Bucs on a healthy roster than Aaron Rodgers is on his own to the Packers.
So then where does Taylor rank in your MVP power rankings right now? Is he top three? Is he top five? Like, where does he fall?
I mean, I'm totally biased, but I probably not top five, probably not top three.
I would hope it wouldn't be top three if it wasn't top five.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're going to – all those are going to go to quarterbacks.
Really? Like, so, I don't know. Think there's five quarterbacks in the league right now having a better year than Jonathan Taylor?
Sure.
Name them.
I'll
challenge that. I don't believe that for a second.
Okay, well, I'll let you say your piece first then. I'm not saying it's not the case. I just don't think he's going to win. I think it's a two-horse race between Rodgers and Tom Brady right now. But, so, I mean, you could also argue Matthew Stafford, maybe Mahomes. So, sure, maybe Jonathan Taylor is, like, number five on that list. Definitely not better than number four, because I think Matthew Stafford would probably would be ahead of him in my vote. So, there you go. There's my answer. He'd be number four.
So, here's the fun thing. I remember hearing this on the radio. So I assume it's true, right? An MVP has never been shut out in an MVP season. So Brady was shut out 1 week. So does he really get to be MVP if he's putting up donuts, kind of thing?
Well, no, not because he puts up donuts. Yeah, I know, Craig. I think that's more of a consequence of the fact that rarely do many games in the NFL end in a shutout.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Like, let alone
against an MVP candidate.
Right?
Yeah.
So does that deserve to win? I don't know. That's a rarity. I think it was just about Rodgers with the other two-horse race. Yeah. He is 10th in the league in passing yards. Yeah, he's 5th in touchdowns. And he also decided to kind of selfishly miss a game against the Chiefs, which could end up costing him the number one seed in the end. Like,
Craig, you're dancing around it. I'll go right out and say it. He lied about his vaccination status, went out of his way to actually lie to reporters, put people's health at risk. So he's at
worst. That's what MVPs do.
Yeah, he's deceitful. He's at worst a selfish asshole, and you can decide where he ranks along that spectrum yourself there. But here's the case for Jonathan Taylor ranking a little bit higher than you might be even giving him credit for, which I'm shocked as a Colts fan. I'm having to talk you into this, but you got to remember who votes for this, right? This isn't voted by the players. It's voted by the members of the press. And the members of the press were absolutely furious that Rogers pulled the stunt that he did, because it was the members of the press he was putting at risk here. So there's going to be a portion of them that it doesn't matter if Aaron Rodgers goes out and throws 10 touchdowns next week. They're still not going to give him an MVP vote, or they'll throw him a sympathy, you know, lower on the ballot than they normally would. So there's a narrative for that. You've also got the fact that, as Craig just pointed out, Tom Brady looked like he was probably the MVP. Vegas had him pegged as the MVP favorite at one point this season. But the
overwhelmingly,
last
couple, actually.
Exactly. But the last couple of weeks hasn't looked very MVP-like. And now, if you're saying that it's going to be a close race, missing Fournette, missing Godwin, missing Evans, do you think he's going to still be putting up those same numbers he was before? Probably not. The NFL is a what have you done for me lately? Yeah.
He plays the Panthers twice and the Jets once, so it's possible.
They might.
But you're right.
or they just hand the ball off to Rojo and it's a blowout, right? Like, we have absolutely no idea what those games are going to look like. But if someone was going to say, all right, Eric, is Tom Brady, who normally his over-under was coming in at somewhere around 320 and a half yards per game, you taking the over, even if it is against those three chump change teams left with all those weapons missing and knowing that they're probably going to be playing with a lead?
It's tempting to say no, because, I mean, although he 320 yards is a lot of yards. Yeah, it's a lot of yards.
His bar was at. I'm just taking what previously at here.
I mean, if that's his bar and that's a lot of yards and he's missing a lot of players that are integral to that offense, then I'd probably go with an under on that. He may get the over, but if you said here's $20, put it on one side, I'm going to put it on the under.
Well, again, barring some miracle aerial attack that I don't see happening over the last 3 weeks, he's going to kind of limp into the finish line. So again, there's someone who was a presumptive MVP candidate who might not be ending the year of the grace. If Jonathan Taylor goes out and has some unbelievable weeks, or a Cooper Kupp goes out, wins the Triple Crown, flirts with breaking either Calvin Johnson or Randy Moss's receiving records down the stretch, I would make a case that one of them could actually end up being a surprise dark horse candidate. Both of them are in my top five. I would probably
right
now, Kupp, Stafford, Jonathan Taylor, Brady, and Rodgers, with Mahomes lurking now that they finally figured out that offense. So don't count him out just quite yet.
I think
Kelsey coming up.
I don't think Cooper Kupp will end up winning. He might, maybe if he goes off and just goes, but I still think he's still kind of underrated when it comes to the MVP race. Like, although I love the fact that Jonathan Taylor is getting headlines and articles written about him, I feel like not enough is being said about Cooper Kupp. So I like the point that you made about him, because he's having a terrific year.
One other thing that's going to help Taylor was the game last week. No one does that for the Patriots defense, except Taylor. Like, so I don't know.
They have the Arizona Cardinals next week, or this Saturday rather, who have a woefully poor run defense.
So there you go. You're talking yourself into his MVP candidacy already. I don't even have to.
No, I'm talking myself in and I'm talking myself out. I'm taking it for both.
Their next two games after, the Raiders and the Jaguars, and they're must-win games for the Colts.
I know.
He's playing.
I mean, if we can beat Arizona on Saturday, I think we give ourselves a bit of breathing room to flop against one of those two and still sneak into the playoffs.
Oh, I know. I'm saying he's going to be playing. It's not like they're going to be resting starters. Like, he's playing the rest of the way.
Let's put it this way here, Eric. Let's lay out this scenario for you, okay? Titans continue to struggle. Derrick Henry never comes back. They kind of limp into the postseason. Colts win out their three games. They end up winning the AFC South. Jonathan Taylor ends up with the touchdown title. He's the leading rusher in the NFL. Tom Brady and Rodgers kind of just put up meh numbers in their last couple of games. And Cooper Kupp maybe doesn't beat any of the three records that he's currently chasing, and maybe someone actually eclipses him in one of the categories. Is Jonathan Taylor your MVP if the Colts win the AFC South?
I mean, your premise has a lot of ifs, but sure, if all those things happen, I think he's gets some serious consideration. Sure, yeah. You're laying out the parameters, Kyle. I get it. I get it. You're speaking my language.
Anyone who enjoys parameters, I know it's you. So I'm trying to refine your logic right now.
I'm telling you, you're speaking my language. Yeah, if all that happened, sure, I'd say that he's a serious candidate, especially if he finishes off the year strong. I mean, the guy's gonna. How many touchdowns does he have already? He have more than 20 yet?
He's got 17 rushing. I'm not sure how many he has.
I think he has 3 receiving touchdowns. So I think that makes him.
He's also 480 yards away from 2,000 rushing, not counting his receiving yards, something that he does that Henry didn't do. And I'd say the gap between him and the second best running back is much, much larger statistically than Brady, who's got a few other quarterbacks that are lurking around with touchdowns and yards.
Sorry, I lied. He has two receiving touchdowns, so he's one short of 20. I don't think he'll get the right. 2,000 yards is going to be tough. I mean, he's going to have to get basically 500 yards in the last
480 yards in 3 games.
Okay, so if we do the math there, Craig, that means he needs to get, we said 480?
Yeah.
So he's going to, yeah, so he's going to need 160 yards rushing a game, which he can do. It's just, that's, again, that's like Tom Brady's 320. That's a lot of yards. A lot of yards.
Jacksonville, but, Vegas.
Yeah. Arizona.
But if he's getting 30 touches a game, then good happens.
Something we haven't even talked about either. Packers just clinched the NFC North. If they win this weekend and the Cardinals lose, like we're nearing the point where they're going to clinch the number one overall seed. So does Rodgers even play the last week? Whereas you know Taylor is going to, because there's going to be seeding, and if he does. Does he only do maybe a half the week before? Because they're all like cupcake games for them. Rodgers might not even be playing more than a game and a quarter over the next 3 games here.
I say just give it to Taylor.
Sure, perfect. You heard it here first. Thanks, Craig.
Crown him. What are his odds? Go on to our friends at mybookie.ag. Use the promo code DINESPORTS. Place a little futures MVP odds on our friend Jonathan Taylor.
Do it, Eric. I'll pay you back. Do it for me.
Well, let's go to my bookie right now and see what the odds are. Why speculate? All right.
I have it right here. Taylor is at plus 620 as of right now, I believe. Week 22nd? Yes. Plus 620. Jonathan Taylor. Behind only Aaron Rodgers at 107 and Brady at 130.
Put a cool $1,000 on that there, Eric. Craig's good for it.
Oh, there it is. Where the hell did you go? Jonathan Taylor at 620?
Do it.
All right, $10 on Jonathan Taylor.
Hey!
All right, moving on. Our boy Jonathan Taylor. There you go. Eric's got a good... Who's on the Canadian $10 bill? Is that McDonald? Laurier?
As a banker, I should know this.
Eric, you work at the bank!
He only deals with...
I haven't worked at the bank in quite some time. Oh no, right, it's now Viola does well. I mean, depending on which series you use, it could be I'm gonna go with Viola Desmond, so I got a nice Viola on that.
There you go, we put a Viola on the,
yeah,
that futures bet.
All right. I like it.
Ravens lose on another failed 2-point conversion. This is the second time now in 3 weeks, having lost to the Steelers in the exact same way. Now, when it first happened, I was not a fan of the decision to go for it when you've got one of the most accurate NFL kickers in history on your team. Both of you guys defended it. Now that it has happened a second time, though, are you guys still squarely in Harbaugh's corner, or now are you starting to go, because they could be the number one seed in the AFC had they won both those games?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't really like the play call on the second one because
I didn't either.
On a 2-point, like when you're that close to the end zone and you only have 12 yards to work with as far as putting the ball somewhere, taking away half the field doesn't really help.
Like, and besides, on the
rollout? Besides, you know, Huntley was if he had to scramble out of the pocket, he was doing it well that game, so I don't see why the need to call that play, but I don't necessarily mind people going for 2. It just looks bad, right? If they went for 2 both times and got it, you know, Kyle, you would have one of the subjects of this podcast being, the Ravens are geniuses when it comes to two-point conversions to win the game. So it's all a matter of perspective. Too small of a sample size to really conclude, but I just it just makes them look really dumb.
Make that argument about any play in any NFL game. Wow. Oh, if only sure. that pass interference didn't happen, he would have walked it in for the end zone and they would have won it there. Like, so what we're arguing here is the fact that he did do those two play calls. So math, you know, you can get the odds all you want. And someone posted a screenshot after the game of like, oh, you know, the Packers are averaging whatever, 9 yards per attempt. The Ravens are only averaging like 3 yards per attempt or something. Like, I get that. But like, you're essentially putting everything onto a coin flip. Whereas you're supposed to be the head coach who is coaching the entire team. You're supposed to have a defense you can rely on, an offense that was finally putting it together in that second half a little bit. And you're just saying, nah, we're going to put all the game on the line here. Like, that's if you're going to put it on a coin toss, you might as well put it on a coin toss in overtime where you could get the ball and Aaron Rodgers never even sees the field. Like, it's the same argument there as the people that are saying, well, it'd be a different conversation if he got it both times. Yeah, it would be, but he didn't. So we're having this conversation.
So for me, I get the whole analytics thing with like percentages of this happening compared to winning a coin flip kind of thing. I think the reason why I liked it more last time versus this time, which I didn't like it at all, was the game flow. Last time against Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's offense was on fire against Baltimore, 17 points in the fourth quarter. And it seemed like Baltimore was just barely hanging on and managed to get a touchdown at the end of the game. So I kind of felt like if it did get to overtime, their defense was toast and this was their best chance at winning the game. This time, it's not like Rodgers and Green Bay Packers are moving the ball that well. They actually, Baltimore had two touchdowns since the last points that the Packers got, and they were playing well on defense. So this time, I think they actually probably should have, based on game flow, just kicked it. Like, I get the stats and everything, but just the way the defenses were playing in both games felt completely different. And it just, sometimes, like, coaches look away from your paper that says, do this. Like, what's it feel like? So I did not like this time. Okay, just to conclude. This time I disagreed.
Eric's looking up more memes right now.
Yeah.
No.
No.
What's a meme?
Well, it's a good point, right? I think people have either gone the, screw it, I'm old school. All you fancy numbers can't tell me anything. And they just completely ignore it. Other people have embraced it almost too much and it's become a cult-like obsession where they don't really even pay attention to what just happened in that game. Who's hot? Who's not? Who's maybe got dinged up the play before and might not be able to get that space that they normally would, and just look right to their sheet and go, 60% chance. All right, go for it, right? Like, there needs to be a soft spot between what the eyeball test is showing you and what the numbers dictate. And that, I think, is where we find, not only in football, but just in sports in general, people have not found a way to properly blend analytics into sports in a cohesive fashion in real time. The numbers can unpack a lot of things after things have happened, but in the flow of the moment, there can't just be a, all right, this happened, look to this chart, this column, this is what we need to do. You need to take into account that these are human beings, not robots at play here.
Yeah. I mean, Staley was another one, right? Mm-hmm. It was a long time ago, but it was still the same week, the Thursday nighter, Chargers Chiefs. How many times did they go for it? And it's like, it's not working tonight. Stop it. Yeah. Right? Take the points. It's not working tonight. They've stopped us 3 or 4 times. And the Chiefs post game said, yeah, we knew based on what they've done during the season that this was a 4-down team for a lot of these drives. We knew what was coming. We were prepared. It wasn't like they were surprised, like, well, get the defense back out there. We need to come up with something. They were ready for the plays.
Yeah.
And it showed.
Yeah. The odds are not existent in a vacuum when it comes to sports. There are other things at play. If your opponent knows what you're going to do, that shifts the odds. But when you've got your printout already laminated, those odds aren't shifting. So stop relying on them as gospel.
And I think some of it too is like, they just have, if it's at this yardage, it says we should go for it. Well, how successful is your team at that? Mm-hmm. How well have they been able to move the ball 5 yards when they needed to at this point? Like, it's just, I just often wonder if they look at their own research and their stats that their offense produces at versus just a generic, this is what the book says we should do. Because if that's the case, then it should adapt based on your personnel and the way the team's going and who you're playing against versus just this is what we do.
Well, I would certainly hope that they've got some sort of sliding scale for these odds. It's hard to say, though, right? Like, who knows? MIT might just have crunched out these numbers and all 32 teams have gone and printed these out and this is what they've got. But there's a huge difference with, you know, Daniel Jones under center versus Patrick Mahomes under center. So whatever the book says, the odds should not be the same for them picking up that first down based on who you're got on your team and who you're going against. Because again, huge difference between the Jacksonville Jaguars defense and the Los Angeles Rams defense.
Exactly. And I feel like it's not enough of a sliding scale for teams.
Mr. Math, Eric Long, has been oddly quiet this whole time. He's clearly crunching his own numbers right now.
No, I mean, there is a bit more nuance to it. I mean, I like the point that you make about, you know, if the odds say it's 60% that you go for it. I mean, yeah, that number's not going to be the same universally throughout every team. So you kind of got to make a business decision on how you feel this, if the scales are tipped in your favor towards that number or not. However, I am a pretty big numbers guy. So, you know, I always like to go with the most rational decision, and the most rational decision is what the math tells you. But, you know, there are, again, it's a bit more nuanced where you can make a business decision based on the team in front of you and the situation in front of you, you know, if, yeah, it's essentially what you guys were saying. So maybe I'm on the fence. I think I do value numbers a bit more than what you guys do based on what you're saying. But you guys certainly aren't incorrect when it comes to that. You shouldn't just blindly say, well, it says this, so we should go. If you have a good reason to think that number fits your situation, then yes, go for it. But if you have a good reason to doubt that going for it on, you know, going for two at the last second, if the defense is really, really good, and maybe it's not a good decision.
It's how your team's playing too that night. It changes everything. Like, think of like if you have a first line in hockey and the guys have been great all along, and all of a sudden, you know, they're, for whatever reason this night, the guys aren't clicking. Usually by the third period, your coach will change it up. They'll shift the lines around. So if that's the case with your football team as well, where things aren't working out properly, then put the book away, use your head, and say, all right, what we're doing isn't working tonight. We need to do something else.
It's not like what the Ravens were doing wasn't working that night. Maybe they just wanted to say, look.
Personnel too, though, right? Like, wasn't Lamar Jackson in there?
Let's I just did not like the call. I didn't like the play call.
We're all in agreement on that. I think what we're trying to highlight here, though, is the fact that I can guarantee with a high degree of certainty that they did not do any kind of extensive research between the time that Huntley was named the starter and when that play occurred. Okay, they did not deep dive, crunch the numbers, and adjust everything. So whatever play sheet they were looking at probably had Lamar Jackson figured in there as starter, if they even tailor fitted it to their own personnel and didn't just universally use some think tank put out research project that reviewed the past, whatever, 1500 plays dating back to 1972. Here's the success rate, right? There's not a chance in hell that they went and they updated it as far as, all right, let's go back to every single Huntley snap and see what his success rate here is and how does that flow with this offense? Because that data doesn't exist in the amount of time that they actually had to cobble it together. So that's what drives me insane about this. So while we play the percentages, no, you played the percentages for a game that no longer applies right now.
Well summed up.
Well, let's see if Eric will use numbers or the eyeball test for our next segment, where we are going to actually attempt to predict who is going to emerge from the giant messes that are the AFC and NFC playoff pictures. So, dealer's choice here, Eric. Do you want to start with the AFC or NFC first?
AFC.
Run us down your AFC teams.
Chiefs number one. I'm going to go ahead and say Colts number two, because I think they play well towards the end of the year and they have the tiebreaker over both Buffalo and the Patriots for head-to-head. And then after that, Patriots. And then after that, oh, this is going to be a tough one. I'm going to go ahead and say that the Ravens, despite their recent struggles with closing out games, win the division and end up number four. Bills number five. I think maybe I'm choosing more with my heart in this one just because I really want them to see them in. Bengals number six. And oh gosh, man, with the everything so even, do you know what? Do I dare say that Tennessee misses the playoffs? I don't think I can do that. I think Tennessee maybe sneaks in at number seven.
Well, I was just looking at the certain teams and what they have left to play here. I think I'm Chiefs one. I think the Patriots probably stay at number two. I'm going the Colts at three and the Bengals at four. I think they stay there. I think the only swap really is the Titans and Colts switcher out. And this is where it gets a little interesting. I think the Titans sneak out enough and they okay. This is where I'm curious. Okay, so I think Buffalo will win out the rest of the way. Actually, can they even? I shouldn't look. All right. Buffalo's going to be fifth. I'm going to say the Titans finish at sixth. And seventh, I actually have the Chargers dropping out and the Dolphins sneaking in.
The Dolphins, too.
Man, I'm going with the Dolphins.
Hottest team in football.
Sir.
All right.
Big game this week against the Saints in primetime. That'll go a long way.
Yeah. And did you know that, all jokes aside here, the current completion percentage leader in the NFL right now through 15 weeks is Tua?
You're shitting me.
I don't know if that was serious or sarcasm.
Well, I was going to say that no matter what. I had that quote lined up for whoever you were going to say.
So. Locked and loaded.
There you go. All right. I'm going Chiefs one. I'm going Pats to win their division. I'm going to say Titans still end up winning the AFC South just because they have the tiebreaker. I think they're going to have identical record to the Colts, but I think they end up moving on, getting the divisional crown because of tiebreak. Bengals, I'm going to go ahead and take them. I know every time we try and give them their flowers and their props, they end up shitting the bed. I'm going to say screw it. Bengals win the AFC North. Then my wild cards, I've got Colts, I've got Chargers, and I've got Bills. Those are in no particular order. I think they can move up and down, but those are the AFC teams I have coming in. I can't really disagree with anything anyone said. That Dolphins pick would be surprising, but it's also not out of the realm of possibilities. Six wins in a row. We'll see, but it'll be a big test this week for sure.
If they can get by there, I think they have a good shot. It'll be another tough game against the Titans and then the Patriots. They've got a tough schedule, but their defense is playing well right now.
All right, heading over to the NFC. So yeah. I'm going to go Packers one, and then I'm going to say Bucks, Rams, Cowboys, Cardinals, Niners, Eagles sneak in the final wild card spot for the NFC. Call it a homer pick if you want. I don't care. They've got nothing but the divisional foes. So that's either going to be a blessing in disguise or their complete undoing over the final couple of weeks. I think they can get past Washington. I think they can get past New York. And then I hope that against Dallas, Dallas is just resting all their starters because they've already locked themselves into a seed.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to you. Maybe just the standing switching a little bit.
What seed are they going to lock themselves into? There's a four-way tie for that teams with 10 and 4.
I know.
I suppose they could really just, you know, do whatever. But
well, I mean, you have to figure it's really – the division winners, if you're looking at the 10 and 4, like the only ones that are in the same division are the Cardinals and Rams. So it's not going to be too much movement there. Like it's probably going to be Packers, Cowboys, Bucks, Cardinals, or no, sorry, Bucks and Rams, I think, somewhere mixed in between like those spots. Packers probably first.
Yeah.
And then Cardinals will be the first wild card spot because the other teams really can't catch them, I don't think. I mean, they could, but they won't. So yeah, my order would probably be Packers, Rams, Cowboys, Bucks, Cardinals, Niners, and then the last spot. I actually kind of like the Eagles going in there.
Oh well, now the two of us have picked it. We've just
kind of them. And I don't know. I just there's something about Minnesota that I just cannot get on board with. Can't do it.
And if you're picking the Dolphins, yeah, you're going to beat the Saints this week. So there's another one.
Gone, right?
Huh? Honestly, I wouldn't change anything about Craig's. That was exactly what mine was going to be.
Oh, Eric's fading fast. We better get through our last one quickly. Yawning on air here. All right, boys, let's quickly run through our pickups of the week. Pipes, who do you got?
Our pickups of the week. They're available. I do like Craig's mention earlier, Craig Reynolds for the Lions, should the other running backs be out and him get some more time. He looked good. He's owned, at least in ESPN, less than 10% of leagues. So.
Yeah.
And if you want to go with a huge flyer, if you have a super flex or two QB league, Jake Fromm didn't look too bad in the last little bits of the game throwing the football. So I don't know, if you want to take a pipe dream shot in the dark with a QB, try Jake Fromm and just see what happens.
All right then. My pick, I feel like, is going to be a pretty popular one with Eckler getting COVID. Justin Jackson going up against the Houston Texans and didn't look too bad against the Chiefs. He was making some big plays when Eckler was actually banged up that game as well. So owned in 8% right now.
Yeah, that percentage is going to be going up quite a bit. I feel like he's going to be a hot name coming off the waiver wires. I'm going to go with Duke Johnson, 2% owned running back for your Miami Dolphins, Craig. You're the new biggest fan.
1-2 punch.
Well, again,
Tim and Gaskin, let's go.
They're saying it's now a running back competition down the stretch. And Johnson,
use them both.
Hey, he put up a 22 carry, 107 yards, one TD, one catch for 20 yards, 27.2 points this past weekend. Even if he is in a timeshare, again, that's an offense that doesn't throw the ball a ton. They rely on their defense and their run game. So even if he is splitting carries, he's still looking at, what, 10, maybe 12 touches a game? I like him.
Yep.
And Veal Award winner this week, Juwan Jennings, wide receiver, San Francisco 49ers. Craig's head snapped back when I said that name because even he doesn't know who the hell he was. 0% owned going into last week. He had a projected points total of 1.86 points. So he was a heavy favorite to have himself a day, as you can see. Ended up with 11.3 points, 3 of 6, 28 yards, 1 TD, but tied George Kittle for the team lead in targets for the San Francisco 49ers. The Anvil Award winner, Juwan Jennings.
I totally know who he is, by the way.
Well, folks, that's all she wrote. Who knows what'll happen with this COVID-riddled week we've got coming up ahead of us. For those that are still in fantasy football playoffs, good luck. It's going to be a civil war in our pods versus pros showdown semifinal. Taking on these two hooligans. We'll see who comes out on top and whether we're all on speaking terms for next week.
All right. Bud Light.